Welcome back to the Groups Matter podcast show to episode 31. I am Brian Daniel with co-host Chris Surratt.
What's going on?
Well, I'm trying to keep the energy going. You know, we just had our producer Drew Porterfield he had Dirty Diana playing. So, you know, I think we're ready to go today.
There is nothing wrong with a little MJ in the morning. A little Michael Jackson to get your day started.
Yeah, Drew had the nerve to apologize. It's like, hey, guys, you know, we're children of the 80s here. That's perfectly all right.
Yes, we are. Yeah, you can crank up some Duran Duran next.
And maybe my wife would love that.
Flock of Seagulls after that, and it's a good day.
Duran Duran was a little after, just a little, like a few months after my time. I missed it by days. Mm. I missed it by days. So, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm good. I've been traveling quite a bit lately. Spent some time with some people in Louisiana. I went to the Regroup conference down there, and I had a chance to talk about small groups. And then the next weekend, I was in beautiful, sunny West Florida down by Panama City Beach and got to speak again at a Sunday school conference called CORE, talking about small groups and off-campus small groups. But it is good to be back here in Nashville in the Groups podcast studio.
So, right, the studio.
Yeah.
So, the one in CORE down in West Florida, well, any takeaways there? It sounds like that was this off-campus, on-campus, side-by-side kind of thing.
A little bit, yeah. Most of the conference was focused on Sunday school and how to do Sunday school, but I did a couple breakouts on off-campus groups and maybe experimenting with doing off-campus groups. So it's always interesting to talk about kind of taking the concept of Sunday school and just literally taking it off your campus and doing it in homes. And I'm getting a lot of just interest in what does that look like? How do we do that? In fact, I'm going out with David Francis in just a few weeks, and we're going to do a whole tour in Georgia talking about, and it's called Side by Side, how do you do Sunday school and small groups, off-campus small groups? Can you do them both at the same time? Do you have to do one or the other? Can they coexist? You know, all of that. So really good questions and good conversation around that idea.
What are the toughest questions you get within that general topic?
I think a lot of times it's what do we do with kids? Because with Sunday school, obviously you have childcare built in. And so it's easy to grab people that are already there. You know, they're either going to Sunday school before the service they attend or after the service they attend. And so there's already childcare. So when you talk about things like moving it off site, you know, it's what do we do about the kids? And really that is a huge barrier for a lot of churches when it comes to small groups and homes, because if you don't think through that and have, you know, ideas and suggestions and help group leaders out, it can stop a lot of groups before they even get started. So I think that's a concern. And then I think it's a lot of times letting some of the control that you have when the group meets on site, you know, on a Sunday morning, letting some of that go and being okay with group leaders kind of having it in their homes, not having as much oversight, you know, all of that. So I think that's two questions that I get a lot.
I think childcare is one of the more compelling reasons for the side by side, actually, because in group life, there's a natural rhythm to where you're young adults, maybe right out of college, maybe not even married, but certainly before children, they're a lot more mobile, more flexible, so they can meet anywhere, anytime, and might prefer that with the life. You know, they like moving around.
Yep.
And then there's a season after the children leave the home that seems tailor-made for meeting in the homes when you can share life experiences. You've kind of been there, done that, and it seems just a lot more communal. And then mm-hmm. in between those would be, you know, that where that regimented schedule is very, very helpful. So you've got everything one place on Sunday. Children go here, adults go here, and that really works.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we talk about is if you're going to experiment with the off-campus groups, it's not a bad idea to start with a demographic like mm-hmm. young adults, young professionals, single, where it's a little bit easier, like you said, with the childcare issues, you know, or, you know, with older adults with the empty nest. So you're right. I think it's easy to kind of start with that, experiment with that, see how it goes. And then if it works, kind of open it up. And again, think through those ideas for childcare so you have some things for people to try out for childcare issues. But yeah, start with those demographics that make more sense at the beginning.
All right, so episode 31, we've got a good show this week or this bi-weekly or semi-weekly. We've got Todd Engstrom that's going to be with us in just a few minutes. And after we talk with Todd, Chris and I will be looking at an article that Chris found in Entrepreneur Magazine about changing culture, which I think will fit nicely with what Todd has to say.
Yeah, I think Todd is going to rock some worlds a little bit with what they're doing at the Austin Stone Community Church in Austin, Texas. They are really taking a missional approach to their groups. And, you know, if you think about kind of changing the culture of your system or even changing your system, you need to think through how do we do that and how do we sell it to our congregation. And I think this article may help you think through that.
Dr. Todd Engstrom is the executive pastor of ministries at the Austin Stone Community Church in Austin, Texas. And beyond that, he also directs the efforts of the Austin Stone in church planning, which includes training, resourcing, and deploying church leaders to glorify God wherever they are. And he regularly speaks, writes, consults with churches on the topics of missional communities, which we'll be talking with him about, as well as organizational leadership at home. He is husband to Olivia, father to 5 kids, and a missionary in his neighborhood.
Five kids.
I guess you'd call him one of those high-capacity types.
He's a busy guy.
Busy.
He is smart. I've known Todd for a long time, and he is one of the smartest guys I know.
Well, I think we've got Todd on the phone now, so let's get going.
Well, hey, Todd, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. I know that you're a busy guy with a lot of stuff going on, but we appreciate you you spending some time with us.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation, guys.
Sweet. Let me ask you a little bit about kind of your background, because I know that you weren't always in ministry, correct?
And that is very correct.
And it's kind of an interesting story how you got to ministry. So talk a little bit about how you ended up at the Austin Stone.
Yeah, I generally say I have the most non-traditional route to ministry that you're going to find. So I originally came to Austin, Texas to pursue a PhD in physical chemistry. So I like to tell people that I was the biggest nerd they have ever met. So came here to UT really to explore the world of fundamental science, and had a passion for ministry, particularly expressed in evangelism. I was discipled and saved in the ministry of Young Life. And so I was always passionate about leading people to talk about Jesus to people that don't know him. And so I came into Austin kind of with that background, and we started looking for a church that we would call home while I was in graduate school, and found the Austin Stone in November of 2004. So immediately just got plugged in and started serving in ministry here at the church. And over the course of about 3 years, while leading our college ministry in graduate school and doing some discipleship with our lead pastor, Kevin Peck, God began to clarify in me a calling to particularly vocational ministry here in the South. So another part of my story is that I'm from Spokane, Washington, originally. So I like to say I'm a sojourner and stranger in the great nation of Texas. And so it was about the farthest thing from my mind that I would become a Southern Baptist pastor in Texas. And so God, in his great irony, decided that's exactly what he would call me to. And so ended up leaving my PhD program to join the team here at the Austin Stone as our very first resident. And then through just a variety of different circumstances, took on various different roles that have included college ministry, assimilation ministry, missional communities, and now executive pastor of ministries at the Stone. So that's a little bit of my journey to ministry.
Very cool. Let me ask you one question, follow up on that. Can you authentically say hook 'em horns now?
Well, it's funny. I'm in a deep amount of tension because on September 4th, the Longhorns will be playing my Notre Dame Fighting Irish, which is where I did my undergrad. So I will be cheering for the Irish at that game and introducing my children to their very first Notre Dame game day experience. So all other days of the year, I can candidly say hook 'em horns because I have a degree from the institution. But on September 4th, it's going to be all Irish and horns down for that game.
Wow.
Hey, Todd, this is Brian Daniel. Thanks for being on the Groups Matter podcast show with us. So I would follow up with that by saying I know a little bit about your senior pastor there. So have you joined him on any hunting excursions?
I have not, though he is known to catch birds out of the air with his bare hands.
I've seen that. I still think it's a trick.
And, It was legit. It was perfectly legit. I can honestly say with integrity, Matt caught that bird out of the air.
So. Ah, you're making a liar out of me. All right. So thanks, Todd. So you mentioned discipleship, and you've always had a passion for that.
Yeah.
As to Chris's question, so I would like to know, and I think our listeners would like to know, about the discipleship pathway there at the Stone. So what does the discipleship pathway look like there?
Yeah, I think to the best of our ability at the Austin Stone, we always want to think theologically, philosophically, and then practically. And so theologically, how would we answer that question of discipleship? Well, man, to encapsulate, we think all that the Bible teaches, I've just kind of created this short phrase. It says discipleship is meeting people where they are and taking them where Jesus wants them to go. You know, it's equal parts understanding that the person in front of us or the people that we've been called the shepherd are created in God's image, you know, rebellious against God through the fall, and redeemed and renewed by Christ to pursue the fullness of life and godliness and make much of Jesus and making disciples themselves. And so, but for us, that phrase is, you know, kind of how we define theologically, for lack of better words, discipleship at the Austin Stone. And our theology always gets expressed into a philosophy, right? So we take what is kind of universally true and understand, what does this look like here in the city of Austin, Texas? And for us, like I mentioned, we're in the South, which if you guys, I know you do know things about ministry in the South. The South is a, you know, familiar with Christianity kind of culture, but we've found that it's really expressed underneath all that through kind of a consumeristic bent. People come to church in the South to have a religious good or religious service kind of doled out to them. They're here to receive rather than ready to engage and contribute and commit to the life of the church. And so for us, philosophically, the starting point that we most often think through in discipleship is we define it as a consumer. Somebody is coming to us wanting to receive something. And our job, if we're meeting people where they are, is to meet them in that tendency towards consumerism. But again, discipleship philosophically expressed means that we're going to take them where Jesus wants them to go, which, what's the end point we're aiming at? Well, we're aiming at a missionary is the best way we describe what a fully formed disciple of Jesus looks like. A missionary is someone whom you send overseas to plant the gospel and hopefully make disciples that become churches, and they're self-sufficient in doing that on their own. So able to self-lead, self-feed, and self-multiply in ministry and mission. And so for us, the philosophy we have of discipleship is saying we're going to meet consumers where they are and help them follow Jesus as missionaries over the course of time. And so our theology leads us to a philosophy that then drives us to practical stuff like strategy. So the strategy we employ is really threefold to accomplish that purpose. Is number one, we're going to focus on assimilation. So we want to take people, the average person whom we interact with, shows up on a Sunday at the Austin Stone, and we want to help connect them to the life of mission and ministry at the Austin Stone. That's primarily expressed through an assimilation process. The second phase of our discipleship pathway is what we call spiritual formation. So we have kind of 10 different marks of a believer and then three different kind of stages of growth for each one of those. And over time, we want to spiritually form them into Christ likeness. And so assimilation, spiritual formation, and then our final is what we call mobilization. So to send people out, one of the biggest things that we care deeply about is not just being a church here in Austin, but making and multiplying disciples, communities, and churches to the glory of God. And that means we need to have a mobilization pathway and pipeline into our city, into new churches, and into the nations. And so our holistic strategy applying our theology and philosophy is assimilation, spiritual formation, and mobilization here at the Austin Stone.
So with the mobilization piece, that kind of leads into the discussion about your missional communities. I know that's a big part of what you guys do, and you even wrote your doctoral dissertation on it, right? Is that?
That is true. So again, one of the biggest nerds you've ever met. So why not?
Well, I read it, so that makes me almost as big of a nerd, although I didn't have
the
to write it.
The question is, did you stay awake the entire time you read it?
No, it was good. I really enjoyed it. But I want to ask you, obviously you guys kind of mobilize through missional communities, but has that always been a part of the process, or is that a fairly new thing for the church?
Yeah, so the Austin Stone was planted in December of 2002, and, you know, kind of our journey was, Matt was a really gifted preacher, and we had Chris Tomlin as our worship leader early on at the Austin Stone, so you can imagine things grew fairly rapidly, you know, and I think over the first kind of 5 years of the life of our church, it was discovering not just what do we believe, but how is that going to play out in the life of the church? And so really it began in 2006, this conversation about missional communities. It was going, hey, what would it look like if we didn't just build the church to grow, but we built the church to multiply? And so that was kind of a lot of that discussion in 2006 was saying, hey, we want to, at the basic kind of level of ministry that we're doing, which was groups at the time, build for multiplication. And so we'd surveyed movements around the globe, had lots of conversation with the missional church, the guys like Alan Hirsch, you know, and also spent some time with our good friends at Soma Communities, like Jeff Anderstelt, thinking through this idea of missional communities. And then in 2007, we started to rebuild what we were doing. So we kind of took a half step towards missional communities in 2007. And then in 2008 is kind of when we pushed the whole church that direction. So I would say from basically 2009 until today has been the process of taking a vision and making it become reality. A lot of people ask us, you know, about this transition to missional communities, and we by no means have completed the transition. We're still a church in process of building towards this vision for a multiplying church at every level, including missional communities. You know, it just takes a lot of time to move this direction.
So, Todd, how do you define a missional community? I've read Saturate, and we've actually had Jeff on the show, so I think I know a little bit about where someone of his ilk lands here. What about you guys?
Yeah, I've often said the Austin Stone is the systematic theology version of missional communities, and Soma Communities is the biblical theology form of missional communities. And so for us, we're going to define a missional community in this way. A missional community is a community of Christians on mission with God in obedience to the Holy Spirit, who demonstrate the kingdom of God tangibly and declare the gospel of Jesus creatively to a pocket of people. So that definition is just a definition. You know, I spend, you know, about an hour just unpacking all of those phrases and what they mean for us, but that's how we would define it here at the Austin Stone. So it's a little bit less simple, a little more complex, but I think it encapsulates lots of things that are really important to us here as a church.
So pocket of people could be any pocket of people. I mean, you're not limited. This is not, I think a lot of times when people think in terms of missional, it's this idea of getting outside your context, but that's not necessarily true in that definition, correct?
Yeah, that's very true. I think one of the things that we learned early on, you know, is that before people will go, you know, before they'll go on mission, they actually need to think about incarnating the gospel where they are. You know, casting a vision for mission is really compelling for, you know, about 10% of the population. And the other 90% of the people that we led were like, this is an amazing vision to go be on mission. But what does it look like for me with three kids in suburban Austin, Texas, you know? And so we had to backtrack a little bit and say, you know, what does a pocket of people look like? Well, it begins with the people that you're already around. It's certainly more than your immediate neighborhood, but it's definitely not less than those, you know, 6, 8, 9 different neighbors that surround your house currently. So let's begin with the people whom God has already placed you amongst and help you be faithful to be a disciple and make disciples there. And then we can start talking about what it looks like to reach a neighborhood, to reach a city, to reach a nation, and a lot of these other things that we think about with respect to mission. So,
I love that approach that you guys have taken, because you said it's complex, but that makes it very simple. Because I think people are scared of what that word mission, you know, they think Africa, but you're saying you're already doing life with the people around you. That's where you start.
Yeah, start with where you are. You know, we often say it this way. One of the things that we unintentionally confuse people with is that, you know, mission kind of became, when we were talking about justice and mercy and those pieces, the mission of God became mercy and justice unintentionally. But we've had to go back and say, listen, mission is always people. Mission is about people. It's about making disciples of real people with real stories, real names, real hurts, real struggles, real successes, real joys, and real lives. And we want to make sure that we keep laser focused on this idea that mission is always people. And so we express it as a pocket of people. And we do projects to serve people, you know? So if we're going to go engage in, you know, a neighborhood just east of our one of our campuses and serve that group of people through demonstrative acts of mercy and justice, well, we have to be reminded that we're not just doing it to do a good thing. We're doing it so that we can make disciples of people over the course of time. So it gives us a better view, I think, of justice and mercy, and keeping that in light of the fact that you can't just do projects. You have to always be in service of people and helping them come to a knowledge of God and ultimately serving them to flourish in their lives here in this world.
That's good. It's not just projects, because when we think missional, yeah, a lot of times we want our groups to go out and do a project. It's about serving, yep, people. That's awesome. One more question for you, Todd. You know, a lot of group pastors that listen to this podcast always ask, how do we develop leaders? And in y'all's context, it sounds even more difficult because you're asking a lot more. So how do you develop your missional community leaders?
Yeah. First, I think in terms of leadership development is defining what it is that a leader does. You know, I think as I've experienced in a lot of groups conversations, you know, people have this definition of leadership that's like this junk drawer. Just throw everything, you know, in the bucket of what a small group leader or what a missional community leader is supposed to do. Everything from, you know, kind of leading people through church-wide campaigns to making sure individual contact happens to regularly communicating back up to whoever's, you know, overseeing them to helping, you know, elders or pastors and pastoral care. I mean, it's just this junk drawer of stuff that's all thrown into the bucket of a leader. And so for us, we have defined leadership in this way and said leaders of missional communities at the Austin Stone do two things. They lead the mission and they shepherd the people. You can figure out how to do those things over the course of time, and we're going to train you to do those things, but we want to clarify for you, when you raise your hand and say, I'd like to lead a missional community, this is what's clearly expected. Number one, we're going to have you lead the mission. Number two, we're going to have you shepherd the people. That's it. So that begins, I think, the process of developing leaders is clarifying for them what's expected. And then I think development begins through identifying new leaders, training basics and reminding people of the basics, and then ongoingly developing those leaders who've been leading for a season of time. So for us, early on, we're going to spend time training new leaders in the basics of kind of our theological convictions around the gospel that's expressed in our partnership commitments. We're going to talk about our philosophy of ministry in missional communities. Why do we do what we do? We have this thing we've developed called the Missional Community Roadmap. It's kind of the basic framework for new leaders to understand and grow in. So, and then it's practically, hey, this is how you're going to get to a place of healthy missional community over time. And so we kind of set expectations on the front end. We give them the tools that they're going to need to lead a community over the course of about 2 years. And then we help them along the way with a coach who's going to walk alongside of them. So that's like standard what we want to see happen for every new leader is giving them basics, giving them tools, and then helping them along the way. And then ongoingly, how are we going to train leaders? How are we going to develop them as they continue to lead in ministry? Well, man, we're going to use kind of we call it the wheel, you know. We're going to train them over the course of time. Kind of number one, in August, we're going to cast vision for where we're headed this coming year as a church. We're going to gather them, generally speaking, in kind of October or November, kind of that mid to late fall time frame. And that's where we're going to deal with pastoral issues. You know, many people, as they're getting into the rhythm of life and the rhythm of community, this is where conflict begins to happen. This is where groups begin to kind of flame out. This is where you know, pastoral circumstances arise for people because they're finally getting into stories and knowing one another. So in that October season, we're going to train on pastoral issues like conflict resolution, general shepherding, those kind of pieces. In January, we're going to always gather all of our leaders, and we're going to do two things in that time. We're going to do stories, so what happened this past season in ministry, and then we're going to do some practical training. So that can either be around the rhythms of life that we cultivate, or it's going to be around situations like, how do you identify a new leader? How can you help the group take more ownership of the mission? Those kind of practical, tangible things. And then in late spring, so usually around the April and May time, we're going to gather just to celebrate. So that gives us a moment in time where we're not doing training, we're not doing teaching. We are actually just going to celebrate what God has done in the life of your community and in your life as a leader. So that's just real practically one thing I'll just throw in there. It was something I had to learn, is celebration so crucial to leadership development. I am a hard-charging alpha kind of leader who likes to drive the results, and I often don't take the time to celebrate some of the things that God has done, and that actually hurts my overall joy in Christ, but also doesn't lead people very effectively. So building celebration as a rhythm was just a crucial learning lesson for us in leadership development.
That's good stuff, man. Trying to take all that in, and we could probably spend an hour on each step that you guys use. So let me give a few resources for people out there. Obviously, you tweet, so your Twitter is at TOODUS. Is that correct?
That's the one.
TOODUS. And then you throw a lot of this, I know, on your website, which is toddingstrom.com. If you want to go read his doctoral dissertation, it's actually on his website, so check that out. And then you guys do a conference, vergenetwork.org, is that right, where you talk about kind of how to do missional communities and some of the practicalities?
That's right, yeah. We have several regional conferences that will be all over the country. I think the next one is in Seattle, October 6th and 7th. So if you're up in the Northwest, we'd love to see you.
Very cool. Well, thanks, Todd, for taking the time. Man, this is really, really good stuff, and I think it's going to kind of shake some paradigms as people think through what it looks like to reach their city with the gospel and possibly do it through missional communities. So thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys at Lifeway and all you're doing. Thanks for leading out in these conversations and allowing me to serve in this book.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
You're welcome.
So that's Todd Engstrom, Dr. Todd Engstrom, and we may not have made this clear, but that's Engstrom with an E-N-G-S-T-R-O-M, if you're going to look Todd up. And again, he's the Executive Pastor of Ministries at the Austin Stone Community Church. Follow him on Twitter at T-O-O-D-U-S or toddengstrom.com, and the URL for Verge is vergenetwork.org. He's pretty buttoned up, Chris. I thought that idea of meeting people where they are, we've heard that before, it's nothing new. But taking this consumeristic mentality and just building that into your pathway to discipleship was pretty fresh thinking, at least to me.
Yeah, it's really kind of going to where people already are. I think a lot of times in church world that we want them to come to us. So it's all based on Sunday morning, come out of your world and come to us and we will disciple you here. You know, we'll take care of all the work. Where what he's saying in their approach is, we're going to go to you. We want you to continue to do life with the people you're already doing life with. We're not going to upset that apple wagon. We're going to come along and we're going to resource you, train you, and you continue doing life, but just do it intentionally. And I love that. You know, he talked about how complex it is. And as you dig into some of the, you know, background and in theology and all that, it does get complex, but really it's simple when it comes to the mission. The mission is the people around you. It's that pocket of people that you already do life with.
Okay, we've got a few minutes here, and you have found this article in Entrepreneurial Magazine about changing culture, which I think was a natural follow-up to what Dr. Engstrom has brought or has mentioned, this idea of missional community, which would represent a little bit of a paradigm change for a lot of churches that may want to move in this direction, though. So we thought this article, we thought this article might be helpful to talk about here. And this idea, my personal opinion on change is there's no such thing as stasis. There's no such thing as a group and group life of it just staying the same. It's going to be moving one way or the other. So you can either harness that change and influence it maybe try and channel it, or you can just let it go, and you know, it may be functional, it may be dysfunctional, you just don't know.
Yeah, I think that we like to make change, and you know, especially if the change doesn't really affect us, we love change, but when the change affects us, we hate change. And I think a lot of times with our group systems, we will jump onto whatever we think is next or what could, you know, just jumpstart our ministry without going through some steps to actually make it healthy change. And Todd hit on that a lot. They've taken a lot of years. I mean, they started this whole process in 2006, and he said they're not even there yet, and they're still working on it. So if you're thinking about kind of what's next for our group system, and maybe it's missional communities, and that's a radical jump, here are three things that I found in this article about if you're going to make a big change with your group system, think through these things first. And the first one is make the case for change. You know, people want to know why. Why should we change? You know, we have this system, this group system, whatever it is, if it's free market or it's discipleship or it's missional communities, it seems to be working. Why do we need to make a change? So it's important that you tell people this is why. We're going to make the case. Before we change it, we're going to make the case for why we need to change it.
And this confronts that attitude that all change comes from the barrel of a gun. People will do that, but especially in a group situation when it's primarily volunteerism, you need to make that case, establish a rationale.
Exactly. They'll do it from the barrel of the gun, but they won't believe in it.
Yep.
And at some point, it'll drift. Then the second point is articulate a clear vision of the desired state. So this is the people don't know what they need until they're shown it. You know, that's the Henry Ford thing, the Steve Jobs thing, that we're going to show you what a fully developed follower of Christ is and a discipled person out of this system. And so if we're going to build missional communities, here's going to be the result of those communities. We're going to change your neighborhood. That's going to change the city. And eventually we're going to change the country and the world. So we're given a clear vision of the inline, of where we're going, the desired state. And then the third one is create clear next steps. So now you have made the case. This is why. And this is the result of this change. Now we're going to give you steps. Instead of going from A to Z, you know, just in one huge step, we're going to implement this process through these stages. And so we're going to start training. We're going to start developing materials, videos. We're going to roll it out through a series of messages. You know, we're going to have these steps to the desired state. And so we're not going to make you just jump from A to Z. We're going to go from A to B to C to D, which I think helps people kind of wrap their arms around whatever change you're wanting to make.
So make the case for change and then articulate a clear vision of a future desired state or end state, and then the clear next steps toward that desired state.
Yep.
Thanks, Chris. Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 31. Love doing this, and glad you guys are tuned in. We thank you so much for downloading this, and look forward to being with you again in 2 weeks for episode 32. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Disciples Path the Journey. Chris, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Disciples Path the Journey is, again, a great system for discipling your people. It's a year-long journey, and you can start in January. If you want to be a launch church with us, we'd love for you to do that. So go check it out online, lifeway.com, Disciples Path the Journey, and it'll take your groups through a process of discipleship. Again, it's that steps, and it's a great way to disciple your people.
Again, thanks for being with us. Look forward to being with you next time.